Hi guys, welcome to another episode of The Carved Tongue. My name, as usual, is Maiola, and today I've got our friend, nominee for Why Niger's Journalist of the Year. Is that it? Am I correct?
Yes, yeah.
Our friend from SA. Previous appearance, you've been on the pod, was it once or twice?
Once, in, I think, sometime February of 2019, I think so, yeah.
Okay, cool. His name is Anu, and, you know, he's here to discuss the latest, you know, match day or the latest weekend from the Premier League. So, Anu, what's popping? How's SA treating you?
I mean, SA has been treating me well. So, we're heading towards summer right now, and today was basically hot. Like, it was insanely hot. Like, it was hotter than Lagos. Like, today's temperature was hotter than Lagos. So, yeah, that's how hectic it has been. But I'm fine, yeah.
Are you wearing less and going out more?
Basically. And then with, like, masks. And with masks as well. Yeah, it was, like, wearing less and definitely going out more. It's short season, which is my season, to be honest. So.
Okay. So, I mean, the first game we have to start with, we're recording this just after Arsenal lost 3-0 to Villa at home. What did you think, or what are your thoughts? Like, I think Arsenal, this... So, under Arteta, Arsenal have... I mean, Arteta is a better communicator than Unai Emery was. He's hit higher highs in terms of, I mean, he led the team to an FA Cup, they won the Community Shield. They look competitive in the big game. So they come into this game off the back of the win, I think the first in 2006 at Old Trafford. But then they're falling short again. So looking at Arsenal and this inconsistency, like, what do you think? How do you think this can be solved? Or what do you think the problem is?
I mean, the problem is easy. The problem is Arsenal have no creativity, right? It's so obvious. For example, like, look at Villa today, right? They had Jack Grealish in the team. Arsenal had no equivalent to Jack Grealish, right? And you just, like, imagine how profound that is, right? Villa were a team on the verge of relegation last season. And here I'm talking about them having a player that Arsenal have no equivalent to, right? This is like, we just, like, don't have a player to create the chances, right? And you can have Aubameyang and pay him however much you want. But as long as you do not have a player who can create chances for one of the best strikers in the world, we're just wasting his talent, right? It's as simple as that, for example, right? And Arsenal's solution in the summer was to ostracize one of the best creative players in the world, right? You can have your faults with Ozil. You can say he doesn't track back. You can say all of those things. They might be true, right? But the fact is, you do not need Mesut Ozil to track back if you have a system that works, right? And the funny thing was, the day we signed Thomas Partey, I was one of few people who said, you know what? I'm not sure this is the guy we need, right? Because the obvious problem here is a lack of creativity in the squad, right? And people who pushed back said, you know what? Maybe Thomas Partey and Granit Xhaka will form, like, the base of a midfield that will help us to be more daring in attack. I thought those people were hopeful, right? But it was still a solid argument. People said, oh, now that we have Partey, Xhaka, and maybe Elneny will form, like, a very, I don't know, like, a very boring midfield base that allows someone like Ozil to, like, just strut their stuff and not worry about tracking back. But I knew that was not going to be possible. And until Arsenal decide that creativity is something that is important to them, we'll just keep having really bad days, right? And it's as simple as that. You either reintegrate a player, you pay £350,000 a week, right? Or you buy someone who is a creative midfielder. Until then, we're just going to have, like, more of these days, to be honest.
Okay, for me, I mean, piggybacking off what you said, I think one of my things with like Arteta and this whole thing is, it's clear like that Arteta is more of a conservative coach than a coach. So it's like, you know, back in the day when people would say Mourinho could not coach a team to attack. So Mourinho was the guy who coached a team how to defend, which is the easy. I don't want, like, not to be offensive, but that's the easiest thing to do in football, like teaching a team how to defend or cutting errors out. The real hard work is, you know, building attacking patterns that basically, you know, make your team very unpredictable, that basically mean that your team will create chances. When you're watching Arsenal, you're watching, first of all, Lacazette playing at number nine, and you're watching Aubameyang tracking back with all he, everything he's got, and, you know, make busting it long so he can cross for like a 5 foot whatever striker. You have to ask yourself, like, how did we get here? Because Arsenal are a team that, when you think back to the Wenger days, this was a team that was basically almost like he was stockpiling, you know, creative types. So the point Arsenal had, Ozil, Rosicki, Wilshere, you know, Ramsey,
Santi Cazorla.
And you know, so for it to have reached this point, I think it first of all captures how horribly run the club has been. The other thing I think it also captures is, like, looking at Arteta, it just kind of makes a mockery of this whole, like, Ozil thing. And I think for Arteta, who has been a stellar communicator, I think that's been one of his best strengths. I think it's been a sore point, because I think his communication on this has been very shoddy, because I don't think the things he said add up, because there's no way you can tell me. And this, like, you think about it, like, towards the end of last season, Arsenal played Villa, a Villa team that were trying to, you know, avoid going down. And it was kind of the same thing. Arsenal could not create any chances. Villa won the game, and basically that game helped Villa stay up. And you look, you think about it, so there's been a, what, 2-goal swing in how many months? Like, in the summer where Villa went out and basically bought a whole new spine, created, like, a team that can challenge the top six out of relegation, like, further. Yeah, so, again, you ask yourself, so that is a club that, no offense, like, were in the championship 2 seasons ago.
Uh-huh.
Basically, there's a greater will, like, there's better investments in that club than a team who are more of a top six side. So, again, there are lots of questions to ask about Arsenal, the whole setup, management, and just what exactly is going on there. And I think the other thing that kind of gets me is because, you know, there's not that much different from when you look at Unai Emery, like, in terms of Emery's Arsenal were better in the big games because they knew how to, like, it's the same thing with Arteta. They know how to set up teams to counter or to, like, basically,
I mean, it's like,
dominated.
Yeah, they shut up shop and then, like, try and eat on the counter.
Yeah. Build from there. And it's why, like, I mean, Arsenal looked better in the big, like, and it has same thing under Emery. They looked better in the games against the big side. But when they're expected to control the game or, you know, like, dominate, they struggle. And I think you cannot build a team, because when you think about it, like, for me, it's always been, like, I was born and I grew up on Wenger and the great Wenger and Fergie teams, basically being the type of teams that will beat. They will beat 16 teams in the league, like, home and away. And the games against the big four, whatever happened, happened. But you knew that, like, when Wolves came to town, they were getting it. And it's the same thing at United, with Solskjaer's United, where they're better in the big games because they don't have to, like, dominate. When they have to dominate, they struggle. And it's just, I mean, it's interesting watching how, you know, these big teams have fallen and these, like, in terms of, like, creativity and how they struggle with it. But, I mean, credit to Villa. And just for you, to show you how confident I was that this was going to happen, I have 2 Villa players in my fantasy team that I did not do anything about. Did not sub any of them. Did not take anyone out, because I just knew that Arsenal would do what Arsenal do. I guess the other big game this today that we have to kind of talk about, obviously, Man City and Liverpool, two of the top teams that have been tipped for the title. That was ended up a 1-0. De Bruyne missed the penalty. Liverpool had a penalty. Gabriel Jesus had that. I really like the goal, like the way the way he turned it around. What do you think this game says about like the state of the title challenge and this season?
I mean, I don't think we can like draw too many conclusions from this game. If it tells us anything, is that these are teams that are tired. Because if you listen to Pep after the game, his main complaint was that, look, because like England is the only country, is the only major league where the 5-substitution rule was scrapped after last season, right? And the argument was that it was going to favor the big teams with stacked squads, right? But you have a situation where people are just dropping like flies this season, right? And it's not hard to see why. They were rushed into finishing last season. They didn't have a lot of preseason. You're playing a lot of games this season. Like the Champions League games that used to be 2-3 weeks apart are now weekly, right? You have, after this game, the players are going for an international break. Some of them are going to, like, players who play for, like, South American teams are going to, like, jet halfway across the world, right, to play 20 minutes or sit on the bench, right? And you had Pep complain about this over the weekend, right? And then after this game, he also complained about it, right? And I thought it was really interesting that the game, like, the whole game was basically played in the first 45 minutes. The second half was just, meh, right? Right. And I feel like if we're going to reach a conclusion from this game, is the fact that the years that City finished with 100 points, Liverpool finished with 90-something points last season, at least for the meantime, those years are gone, right? Whoever is going to win this league this season is going to finish mid-80s, right? Because there's nobody in top form, right? Everybody is playing basically drunk. Everybody is playing tired. And yeah, so I think the major conclusion that I'm taking from this game is the fact that these two teams have not been in top form, but when it comes down to it, when it comes down to crunch time from February, I expect both of them to be the ones in contention for the league. But I also don't expect anybody to reach the insane heights of the past three seasons where Liverpool and City and Liverpool won like with incredible point tally, right? I don't think anybody should expect that. Just expect the good old days of 86 points, 84 points to win the league, right? But I think we saw enough in the first half to show that these are the two sides that will be in contention for the league title at the end of the season.
And you might get teams that makes it tough for 70 points. I agree with you. And then I think for me, the other thing he kind of said is that I think both teams, like, I think they understand and they, you know, that point where like two elite teams kind of have figured each other out. So, like, I think of when, but there was this point where Barcelona and Real, I think it was 2010, 2011, when they played themselves like four times in the space of like two or 3 weeks.
I remember that. Everybody was tired when it was done.
Yeah, like I think both Liverpool and City, I think over the years, they played themselves enough times that I think both managers kind of have figured how to like cancel each other out. So what you end up getting is just a very, I mean, they're trying, but it's the type of thing where there's an acknowledgement that at the end of the day, this thing is 1 point. Like, let's just collect our 1 point and go away, especially in the league. Like, it's different in the Champions League or in the Cups where, I mean, there's more of an incentive for you to
go all out,
beat the other team. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, I've seen people describe this as like, like Klopp's Liverpool have been described as Pep's toughest assignment. And I think there's some truth to it, right? The only team that I've seen that has like troubled Pep this much was 2010, 2011, Real Madrid. I mean, he beat them 5-0 the first time Mourinho came. And then the second season,
yeah,
Mourinho won the league, and then Pep was like burnt out, right? So that was a very difficult test. But I think Liverpool, clubs Liverpool represent like a much different specimen, right? And as you said, they've just like figured each other out so much that, I don't know, there's just like a certain repetitiveness to it. So I feel like if you're going to get interesting City-Liverpool games, you are going to have to look for them in the knockout cup games, right? In the Champions League or at the like far, like the later stages of the Carabao Cup or the FA Cup. Otherwise, we're just going to find this like interesting like tactical battles that like end 1-1. I mean, this is going to age badly in like 6 months when they face each other at Anfield, and then someone wins 4-3 or 5-6 or something like that. Yeah.
Okay. The other prominent game this weekend, Everton United. So there are a couple of teams like outside of the traditional big six. So when I say I'm talking Everton, Leicester, Villa, Palace, who this season have really started well. But then Everton seems to have kind of hit like they've hit the dry spell. So things have not been as rosy in their last couple of games. And then United, who again are very inconsistent. United win one game a week, they lose the other, or they just like, or they draw, and it's just you can't really tell which United is going to turn up. United, I mean, came out of this game on top. So, what do you think, like, Ancelotti needs to do to restore Everton? Like, what do you think is going wrong? I didn't watch this game, but my dad who did said he felt everything unlucky.
I mean, I watched the first half. I think number one, Everton need a new goalkeeper. And I'm saying this as someone who has supported Jordan Pickford, right? I consider myself a bit of a Jordan Pickford fan. I mean, he was like excellent in that Sunderland team that went down, right? And during the World Cup, he was excellent as well. But there's just something about him that reminds me of a certain former England goalkeeper. Like, the similarities are way too common. It's Joe Hart, right? They're way too hot-headed, right? They're too excitable, right? I mean, you want fire from your goalkeepers. Like, the great goalkeepers of old, you had people like Peter Schmeichel. You had someone like Jens Lehmann. You had Oliver Kahn, right? The greats had some madness about them, right? The thing about madness is there's some method to it, right? The problem with Jordan Pickford's madness is, on current evidence, there doesn't seem to be a lot of method to his own madness, right? So it's rash. I mean, yesterday he could have been sent off in the first half as well, when he like basically lashed out. I mean, he dropped a high cross and then he lashed out as Maguire, right? Sometimes he could have been sent off for that. We saw how he basically wrecked Van Dijk's season so much so that we don't even know if he's going to be fit for the Euros, right? So, if you want to build a successful team, this sounds cliche, but it starts from your goalkeeper. And Jordan Pickford inspires zero confidence. Your backup goalkeeper is Robin Olsen from Roma. There's a reason why Roma were like quite happy to loan him out. He went to Roma after the 2018 World Cup when he like was a superstar for Sweden when they got to the quarterfinals. But after like a first, like some mistakes, right? I mean, he was stepping into Alisson's shoes, which is like never easy. But at the same time, it was such like a massive drop off that Roma had no choice but to find a replacement, right? So Everton have basically two goalkeepers that are not fit for purpose, right? So if you start from there, it's like, yeah, Everton, they don't have a good goalkeeper. But I also think that maybe Everton's good start to the season may have unnecessarily raised expectations, right? Because in a normal year, nobody would be having like in-depth conversations about Everton losing to Manchester United. This is what Everton does, right? I mean, one of the interesting questions is, what is Everton, right? Like, what does Everton stand for, right? I mean, especially in this age where there's like this stratified top six and then Everton are just like floating around. And it just feels like they're going to spend a lot of money to get basically Real Madrid and Barcelona cast-offs. And I don't know, maybe finishing between 7th and 10th is not such a bad thing when you have competitors who are insanely richer than you. When you have the likes of Man City, likes of Liverpool, who have like the GDP of a small nation to spend. Maybe, I don't know, because I feel like Everton are going to finish somewhere between 7th and 10th this season. And I don't think that should be considered as failure, basically. So, yeah. I think,
I guess I agree with you to an extent, but I also think part of why I think expectations have kind of heightened is, I think it's kind of clear this season that, I mean, based on what we've seen, that this is probably the type of season where, this is your Leicester type season, where, you know, you could, there are a couple of teams that have potential to be serious outliers, because you have teams like Spurs, Man U and Arsenal, who, I mean, traditional big six, but both really, I think, you would say are in flux. What I say both, I mean, all three you would say are in flux. They're all trying to figure themselves out. So, for teams like, I mean, Leicester came narrowly close last season. So you have teams like Leicester, Everton, Villa, Southampton, who, like, you know, if they can put on a consistent good run of form, they could basically crack that traditional big six hegemony. But the other thing I think with Everton is because Everton have, like you said, I mean, they have the Real Madrid and like Barcelona cast-offs, but they also have one of the truly elite managers of the game. Even though I think, you know, people get excited too easily about Ancelotti, because Ancelotti has a terrible record in the league. He's more of the guy who can lead teams like in the cups. But I don't, like, I really don't see Everton winning a cup per se. I think the type of run they'll need, I think, to be consistent is the type of run where, you know, their best players don't get injured. And then, you know, there are teams that have started well and then with who might have flaky players. And then, you know, once winter hits, you know that, like, it's a wrap. And those guys are going to go till, like, March, April. So it's just, my concern for them is, do they have enough, like, the golfing? Like, so when, if anything happens to Hammond, like, can you trust Iwobi and Sigurdsson to, like, provide the kind of services he provides? I don't think you can. And I think you have to, for a team like that, at that level, you have to kind of be prepared for that. So I guess for them, it's just more about, obviously, doing as good as they can and then trying to see how, you know, they can invest and close the gaps and plug the holes. But I think for Everton to be successful this season, I think you need one of the big, big teams to kind of, or you need a couple of the big, big teams to have bad spells. United, again, I guess, very inconsistent. You just don't know what to expect with them. Very hot and cold. And my personal belief and opinion is that United are prolonging the sacking Solskjaer unnecessarily. It's something they should probably have done a year ago. Once it was Pochettino was available, I think they should have done everything within their power to bring him in and just accept and admit that, you know, that experiment didn't work out. Because I'm not sure, I don't think I have faith in Solskjaer to plug that gap or lead United to the high side edge sticking to heat. I think they just need to kind of just accept that, you know, maybe this chapter is over. And it's very annoying that I'm saying this after they just won a game. But
No, you're right.
It comes on the back of them losing to Arsenal. It comes on the back of them losing in the Champions League. It's just like, how much longer can you guys take this thing? Like, what exactly is really going on? So I think you need one of those executives at United to kind of take ownership of the situation. I mean, you thank Solskjaer, he's a club legend, thank him, you know, he came in at the time when the club needed him, but thanks for the memories and all that for
yeah. I mean, I have like
no,
I have,
he's not cutting it.
I mean, like, anybody that follows me on Twitter knows I have like strong opinions about Solskjaer. and Frank Lampard to some extent, right, is the fact that these guys have jobs at this extremely important clubs because of tradition, in air quotes, right? And this is like not an original thought, this is from Daniel Story of I think formerly of Football 365, who says, if you sack Solskjaer today, right, how many clubs in the Premier League and the Championship would be happy to take him, right? That is the measure of the type of manager that you have. And unfortunately, as nice as it seems, Solskjaer is not a United level manager, right? And the problem is, giving him a 3-year or 4-year contract after the PSG win last year, was it last year? I think it was last year, was incredibly short-sighted, yeah. Right? Because again, it goes back to this thing I was saying about who else would have him. At the time when they gave him the contract, literally no other club was in the running to hire Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, right? There was a reason he was coaching in Norway before you went to fetch him, right? And you gave this guy a contract because a VAR decision at the, I don't know, 95th minute made Rashford score a penalty, right? But this guy has shown that he does not have the nerves to be a United manager, right? And then you also have the fact that United also have a bunch of overpromoted footballers who are playing for United, who should have no place playing for United. Like, one of the great myths of this season is the fact that pundits often say, ooh, who is going to partner with Harry Maguire in center midfield? Is it going to be Bailly? Is it going to be Lindelof, right? And nobody has like stopped to consider the fact that maybe Maguire himself isn't good enough, right? Only United could have paid 80 million for this guy, right? I mean, City, with all their money, were interested in Maguire, but that price tag put even City off, right? That should be a good metric of how overpriced a footballer is, if City think he's overpriced, right? This same City that spent 50 million on Otamendi, right? United have a coaching problem, they have a squad problem as well. Like, there's like so many players who just do not fit. Luke Shaw, for all his improvements lately, is not what like champions are made of, right? There's Luke Shaw, there's Harry Maguire, there's Lindelof. Bailly is too injured for you to even consider if he's good enough, right? Matic. Pogba is, at this point, I think United should cut their losses on Pogba. I just think it's just never going to work. I have no theories. Pogba is an excellent footballer, right? We've seen what he can do with France. But for whatever reason, it's just not working with United, right? So I feel like the only part of United that is good enough is like going forward, right? Marcus Rashford is an exceptional footballer and an even better human being, right? So not only is it like a very good footballer, he's British Prime Minister, mm-hmm. and also at the same time, the leader of the opposition Labour Party, right?
The position.
You have that. Martial is a very good player. Bruno Fernandes is like chef's kiss, excellent, right? So I feel like they're really good going forward. Cavani is a decent addition. We saw what he did yesterday against Everton when he scored the third goal, right? But like, the midfield to the back has been a mess. They don't have a manager as well. So, I mean, they could finish in the top four, not because they are good, but because everybody else is bad, right? So, I don't know. United have a lot of
them last year.
Yeah, United have a lot of problems.
Okay, I'm trying to think. I think, okay, we've had a couple of 4-1s yesterday. Crystal Palace beat Leeds. Chelsea beat Sheffield United 4-1. Chelsea are beginning to click. I think Lampard really needs this, because I think after being supported the way he was in the summer, it's very imperative that he starts to show workings, and he's had a good couple of weeks after post the Southampton game. But the question I have is, how long is too long, like, for Sheffield to continue going like this?
Man, I mean, I don't get what's wrong with Sheffield, right? Because it's basically the same manager, the same group of players. They spent quite a bit of money on Ryan Brewster. And maybe that is the problem. Maybe everybody has figured them out, right? They are bottom of the league, I think, with just 1 point and a goal difference of minus 10, right? And we're starting to get to that point of the season where owners and the board are thinking, you know what, maybe it's time to take action, right? And they have a Saudi owner, right, who like, I mean, it's a whole different story of how he became the owner of the club.
Yeah.
But it's like, at some point, you expect some ruthlessness. And then the question is, how much leeway do you give someone, a manager who exceeded all expectations last season, right? But the problem is, in football, the easiest person to get rid of when things are not working is the manager, right? You cannot sack 25 players, but you can sack a manager and hope that there's someone elsewhere who will come in and give you that immediate bounce, right? And so, that's the thing. When do they start? I mean, we've played 8 games of the season, right? It's November. It's like winter already in the UK, right? When the days get shorter, that is when clubs, you know, I don't know, maybe I don't know what it is about winter in the UK that makes clubs like have also like a shorter patience for their managers. So, I mean, I'm thinking someone is going to get sacked very soon. And if I had to put money on it, it would be the Sheffield manager, right? Yeah, it would be Chris Wilder, right? I mean, because they also spent 20 million on Ryan Brewster, who is untested at this level, right? And they are basically paying for potential. So, I don't know. It's only a matter of time before it goes if things don't turn around, right? Because you look at the other teams in the bottom, like in the bottom three. Look at Burnley, right? That's Sean Dyche. You're not going to sack Sean Dyche because Sean Dyche told you in the summer that he needed reinforcement. And for whatever reason, Burnley thought it was a good idea to not buy players for Sean Dyche, right? You have West Brom are just bad, right? When I did my predictions, I said West Brom were going to go down with Fulham, who are a different case entirely. And I love Fulham. Yeah, but like I think Chris Wilder is on borrowed time, to be honest.
I mean, it's sad in the context of what happened last season, but it's a result game because you can't expect a club to. I mean, he's been back, he's been supported, so and for me, it's just because the drop off. And this happened post-lockdown because after the lockdown, they weren't really, there was like a level that dropped, like that they lost. And now it's just become a steady decline. And because when you think about it, the way Sheffield came and took the league by storm last year, you know, in Beatles, he was very inventive tactically. He had a team that was very strict defensively. And they were very well drilled. They weren't letting up for space. They would press teams. The overlapping fullbacks. The way he was using his fullbacks, people are comparing him to, you know, what them continental managers, and then just watching nothing come of it this season. You just look at them, and you know, at this point, you kind of start like the margins are becoming clear because Sheffield started well. And it's kind of the same thing with Fulham, where that's the funniest thing I think I've seen in the league this year. Yeah. Fulham having a penalty in the last couple of minutes. And Ademola Lookman tried to panenka it. And he just does the worst panenka
that you will ever see
in your life. If I was his manager, like, I don't care, I'm finding you 2 weeks' wages for that. Fulham needed, you know, you can already tell it's going to be a long season for them. They've been lucky they won a game. You know, they needed, if they got 1 point, you can just see, okay, it's like, you know, they're taking it slowly, they're building. But then, you know, that just happened and it just, man, you just, you know, those are the signs you start getting, like, when know that the stars, everything is conspiring against your team. I think, I mean, obviously, I don't think we can have this conversation without looking at, like, Southampton, who, coming into the weekend, were the top team in the league. But, I mean, after some of the things that have happened in terms of the games, they've kind of fallen in bit. But Southampton, traditionally, Southampton, the last couple of years, have been one of those teams who have... They remind me of Martin O'Neill's Villa side in that, you know, they've all, for a while they were always there and about, and then they had a point where they fell off. But then under Ralph Hasenhüttl, they've kind of found like a new lease of life. You can tell that. Because, I mean, I have this theory about, you know, managers and coaching. He hasn't spent that much money, but you can see players have improved because he's a good coach. He makes players around him better. He's built a
yeah, I mean,
you know, you can just see them continue to cut hell like this season.
I'm a big fan of Hasenhüttl, right? And I think back to my point about Lampard and Solskjaer, right? There's no way Lampard and Solskjaer should be managing teams like Chelsea and United, and Hasenhüttl is managing Southampton. He's an excellent manager, right? Like you said, they haven't spent that much money, but he has improved a lot of players, right? James Ward-Prowse always had talent, right? But it was like always inconsistent, and now is this is a baller basically, right? You have
Steven Gerrard reincarnated.
Right? Like everybody in the squad has gone up a level. Shea Adams, who couldn't score before, is scoring goals now, right? I mean, we don't know how much. This was the first game they played without Danny Ings, who's going to be out for like 6 weeks. But like for the most part, Hasenhüttl has improved the players they have. And to be honest, I think the only managers in the Premier League, and this is a big call, but I think the only managers in the Premier League who are better than him are Jurgen Klopp and Pep, to be honest. Those are the only two managers who are better than Arsenal. It's
You take him over Bielsa?
Okay, maybe I forgot Bielsa, right? But like, I mean, Arsenal is going to speak English, so maybe he wins with that, right? But like, he's such a good manager. And I mean, the hallmark of any good manager is the fact that they improve players. Like you see, I mean, everybody can spend money. I mean, spending money is also an art. So you could like spend money and waste it. We saw it with Fulham the last time they came up, spent over 100 million and couldn't make it work. But like, there's something about Hasenhüttl that's just like, he improves his players. And he's a very good manager. And I think the similarities between last season and this season is that Southampton have like taken big L's and then come back from it. Last season they lost 9-0 to Leicester at home, and people were saying sack this guy. They stuck with him, and they've reaped the rewards. This season as well, they lost 6-1 to Spurs at home, and since then they've basically been on fire. So I think the key to Hasenhüttl Southampton is someone needs to beat them silly at the start of the season, and then they'll be fine for the rest of the season. So yeah, he's a top manager, and like he deserves all the credits to like getting this team back on track.
Final one last one before we kind of end this episode. I've been moving away from the Prem and looking at Syria. So again, this weekend Juve drew. And this has been like a consistent thing this season. They've dropped a lot of points in the last couple of games. They won their last Serie A game before this one, but then they've drawn, I think, two games in a row. And they've drawn to Roma at the beginning, at the beginning of the season. And you're asking yourself, because I think obviously everyone had questions the way Andrea Pirlo was hired, where he barely worked for, well, how many days? He was hired as head of the
under 21 manager, yeah, 22
and 21. Within like a week or whatever it was after Sarri left, he got the job. And you ask yourself, is that thing we're talking about, like with people like, you know, Lampard you know, those guys only go to so they're linked clubs, and you kind of you can say the same thing about Pirlo. And it's just because I think now people are beginning to get wary and are beginning to ask questions. And you looking at Juve, because I mean, Juve are coming on the back of how many years is it of them winning the Serie A? It's gotten more competitive in the last couple of years. I mean, Conte is at Inter. You know, Conte is Conte. Like Conte.
Yeah, Conte does Conte things.
And I mean, I guess at this point we need to kind of have a conversation about Juve and what it is like their trajectory looks like. Do you can, I mean, rescue the situation, or do you think he's in over his head?
I mean, you like the example that everybody points to, right? Is Pep Guardiola, right? They say, but Barcelona, I had Pep, right? What nobody forgets to say, what people forget to say is Pep had at least a season with the youth team, right? To like showcase what his ideas were, right? But like with Pirlo is, let's be honest, someone who is benefiting from having the right connections, right? I think it's just basically stupid that you have Juventus that is basically a $1 billion business, as it were, right? Maybe obviously they're not worth a billion, but like $1 billion business basically, and they are anchoring their hopes on a neophyte, someone who this summer literally just got his qualifications to be a top level manager. In what other industry are you going to do that, right? I mean, it's like, to like use an industry example, it's like the New York Times looking for an executive editor and then plunking someone who has no experience and say, come and lead a team of 1,700 journalists, right? Why would you do that? It makes no sense, right? And them doing that, iron Pirlo, is this, I don't know, it's a sign of seriousness, it's a sign of a lack of imagination to just like hand over the reins to someone, right? And if you say, I mean, again, hiring Sarri last year was a stupid idea as well, right? I don't think he had the personality to like lead a group, like that group of Juventus players, right? And they basically forced Allegri out over style concerns and over his inability to win the Champions League. Bear in mind, this is the same person who took them to two Champions League finals, right? Sarri's biggest achievement literally came weeks before they hired him. He beat Emery's Arsenal in the Champions League final, right? So I just think football clubs, I think Jonathan Wilson has like espoused on this in The Guardian at like full length, like football clubs are making such irrational decisions, especially the big ones. It's just like a lack of imagination, right? And you have a situation where Solskjaer is managing United, Lampard is managing Chelsea, you have Pirlo in charge of Juventus, right? This makes no sense. And I wouldn't be surprised if they won the league again. I mean, you have Cristiano Ronaldo, however old he is, he's still firing, right? I mean, he still scored today, right? They could easily win the league again. I mean, they are like just 4 points behind 4 points behind AC Milan right now, right? So yeah, they could win the league. And interestingly, they haven't actually lost in the league this season, right? So they've won 3 and drawn 4 games.
Yeah,
right?
They've just drawn a lot.
Yeah. So like, they could win the league. It's not insane for them to win the league, but how much progress are they possibly going to make under someone who is just like learning the job, right? It's like learning on the job. I mean, there are going to be a number of interesting managers who are going to be, you could always still go for Pochettino. PSG's manager, Thomas Tuchel, is going to be out of a job, I don't know, very soon. I don't think it's going well with him and his Qatari employers, right? But I just think it's insane that like valuable businesses will just hand over the reins of their businesses to someone because it's their guy, right? And there's like one last point that I want to add about like my rant about this is the fact that I usually don't want to be that guy, right? But there's also an element of whiteness to it, right? Why am I saying this? Sol Campbell is my example. Sol Campbell did an excellent job at clubs with no, like, excellent jobs at clubs with no money. Macclesfield are basically in administration right now, right? No, they're not even in administration. They basically ceased to exist in the current format, right? I think he was also at Southend for a point, right? Basically, Sol Campbell did magic, right, with clubs that were bottom barrel. That still has not gotten him an interview elsewhere, right? And you have people like Lampard just waltzing into jobs, right? Because they have the right connections, because they know the right people. And there I say, because football just continues to be an avenue for whiteness to win, right? And I don't know, it's just really bizarre. And yeah, all I'm saying is someone needs to interview my man so can't bear for a job.
I'm with you on that. Anyway, I guess this has been a very fun episode. It's happy to have you. Well, I'm very happy to have you back, and I'm sure the listeners would too. Thank you for making time to, you know, just have this quick call. Also, once again, congrats on your nomination. Hopefully, you bring it home so that we can fund you. We can say, we have journalist of the year on our podcast. Yeah, and I'm sure nobody on there has your type of range in terms of, you know, doing football today, writing about Invictus will be tomorrow. But yeah.
Yeah, I'm very happy to be back. I mean, football is my first love. So no matter what I do, we'll always come back to the football. Yeah, I'm glad to be back. Thank you very much for having me.
Hi, man. Love, guys. Have a wonderful week. And yeah, okay, it's International Week, so I guess we'll be quiet for it. So the game is back.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. A new episode will be available next week. To get the podcast first, kindly subscribe on SoundCloud, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. This podcast is part of the Culture Custodian Podcast Network.